Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jim Doling, your host for this hour, and thank you for joining us. Today's program is about game shows. They're very popular still on television and back in radio. Yeah, they were popular then, too. We have Groucho Marx and his show, You Bet Your Life, coming up in this program. And we'll have what Groucho really thinks about game shows. That's a little featurette coming up after we hear from the game show Information Please. So this is a straight-up game show from 1939 with guests Rex Stout and Wilford Funk.
Information Please, presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information Please. We set up four talking encyclopedias, and you send us the toughest stumpers you can think of. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, we should like to emphasize again the fact that Information Please is unrehearsed and unpremeditated. We always like to repeat this for the benefit of members of the I Don't Believe in Santa Claus Club. Now, opposite me this evening at a long table are seated John Kieran, our omniscient sports expert, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the Conning Tower, Rex Stout, creator of the famous Nero Wolfe Mysteries, and as our special guest of honor, Wilford Funk, publisher, lexicographer, and author of many books of light verse. Now remember, for each question that's missed by these gentlemen, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question. All right, suppose we start with an inquiry sent in by Frank D. Richardson of the city. Now, you gentlemen, of course, all know your presidents very well, I assume. And Mr. Stout, at least, who has a most beautifully tended beard and mustache, should know something about beards and mustaches. Now, I'm going to ask you to put your knowledge of hirsute adornment together with your knowledge of the presidents of the United States and name for me the last 3 presidents who had mustaches when they were in office. I mean, the presidents were in office, not the mustaches. The last 3 presidents who had mustaches when they were in office. Mr. Stout, the possessor of a very fine mustache, beautiful one.
Theodore Roosevelt. Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland is 2.
Chester A. Arthur.
The last 3 presidents. Chester A. Arthur, I'm afraid, would be wrong. The last 3. Mr. Adams?
William Howard Taft.
Yes, he had a beautiful one. Very fine, generous mustache. Well, I think I'll let that go. Between the 2 of them, they got the 3 presidents with mustaches. Mr. Stout, you're probably the only one who has any right to answer this query. Do you mind if I put a political question to you?
I'd like it.
Do you think we'll ever again have a president with a full beard and mustache, or do you think those days are gone forever?
With a mustache or with both, Mr. President?
With both. The same sort of thing that you have.
I'm sorry, I don't think I'll have time to try for the office.
Well, Mr. Stout is out of the running. The next question from Claire W. Callahan of Pottstown, Pennsylvania, is this. I'm going to read some quotations, 4 of them. And each of these quotations, they're pretty well known, is in the form of a question. Now, the answers are given in the lines that immediately follow these quotations. And you're to give me those answers. In other words, just finish the quotation. The first question is, how many hairs will make a wig? How many hairs will make a wig? Ever hear that line when you were children? Mr. Adams.
You mean what precedes it?
No, what follows it? The next line or lines answers that question. How many hairs will make a wig?
24, that's enough.
Good. Very good, Mr. Adams. And remember the next line goes on after that? 24.
Give the poor barber a pinch of snuff.
Yes, don't be so pathetic about it. No poor, just give the barber a pinch of snuff. That's fine. And how, where are those lines from, Mr. Adams, do you know?
Oh, probably Mother Goose.
Mother Goose, yes. I think they're generally ascribed to that lady. Now the next question. When shall we three meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain? Do those lines awaken any response in those giant brains of yours, gentlemen? Mr. Kieran, your giant brain?
No, they're the witches in Macbeth.
They are.
Trying to think up what...
Just go through the whole play until you come to those lines, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams?
Double, double, toil and trouble.
That would not be the answer to the question. That's a very good quotation from Macbeth. And I'm glad to get it. But it doesn't answer the question. When shall we three meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain? It goes on. When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost and won. Remember now, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, Mr. Funk, Mr. Stout? They're all smiling. They all remember it. Sorry, we have to count that wrong. Now, we have to get 3 out of 4 on these, so we have to get the next 2 quite correct. The next one's very easy. I don't think I'll even give you the line. I'll whistle it for you instead. How's that?
Mr.
Funk.
Well, where is somebody gone?
Who?
That's what I'm trying to think.
Be precise in this program. Mr. Adams?
My Highland laddie.
Yes, but what's the answer to the question? The line is, oh, where and oh, where does your Highland laddie dwell? And the answer is, Mr. Stout?
No, I'm using the second stanza. Where and oh, where is your Highland laddie gone? He's gone to fight the foe for King George upon the throne.
That will do very well. That will do very well. The answer to the first stanza question, oh, where and oh, where does your Highland laddie dwell, is he dwells in merry Scotland at the sign of the Blue Bell. But your answer is perfectly correct, Mr. Stout. And who wrote the song?
Wasn't Robert Burns.
Very well-known writer. Very well-known. Find him in any index. Mr.
Anon.
Anon, yes. Oh, Joe Anon. That's right.
You know the answer.
I pulled that out of the clouds.
Pretty good, wasn't it? Now, the last quotation in the form of a question. Goodness me. Why, what was that? Mr. Adams?
Silent B, it was the cat.
Right, correct. And what's the quotation from?
HMS Pinafore.
HMS Pinafore by Gilbert and Sullivan, of course. You could go on with that quotation if I dared you, couldn't you, Mr. Adams?
Though I'm anything but clever, I could keep that up forever.
They got 3 out of 4. Good enough. Haven't been able to stump them yet. I'm going to switch you from poetry now to vegetables and fruits and things of that sort. Mr. A. Hill of San Francisco tells us the following fruits are all hybrids. Of course, you all know what a hybrid is. Now, what fruits were crossed or grafted to produce them? The 3 fruits are the plumcot, the tangelo, and the loganberry. Now, the first, the plumcot, was made from what other fruits, Mr. Stout?
A plum and an apricot.
A plum and an apricot. Of course, you might have gotten that just from the sound. Mr. Funk, you'd admit that would be a pretty easy one.
I was just raising my hand.
By the way, I'm sorry, Mr. Funk.
On a guess.
That is in your dictionary, the plumcot?
I can't tell you that, honestly.
All right, we're going to look it up. The next one is the tangelo. T-A-N-G-E-L-O, the tangelo. A fruit, I must say, I have never heard of. Mr. Kieran, want to guess?
Nobody wants it. I'd say it's a cross between a tangerine and a...
And
a
jello.
Lemon.
I beg pardon?
Tangerine and a lemon.
No, I'm sorry. What made you think it was a lemon?
Well, on account of that...
Yellow?
The labial.
Yeah. You'd have to reverse the spelling of lemon a little to get that word out of it. No, it's produced by crossing a tangerine with a grapefruit, any grapefruit that didn't object to it. The name is derived from tangerine plus pomelo. Pomelo, P-O-M-E-L-O, they tell me, is another name for grapefruit. Did you know that, Mr. Kieran?
No, but shaddock is.
That's good. That's good. But I don't see what you could do with shaddock if you wanted to cross it with a tangerine verbally.
I don't think I'd like it. It sounds too complicated.
It does sound too complex, Mr. Funk, doesn't it? Sorry I have to count you wrong on that, Mr. Kieran. Now, the loganberry was produced from what fruits, the loganberry? Mr. Kieran.
That was one of Burbank's creation and creations, and it created an awful row in the berry world about 25 years ago.
Haven't the slightest doubt.
Question whether it was really helpful or not. I've forgotten who won the Great War, but...
I'm delighted to get that information, but would you give me the answer to the question, Mr. Kieran?
No.
Well, that's 100% so far. The Loganberry Gentleman is produced from a graft of the trailing blackberry bush and the red raspberry bush. Of course, we all should have known that. And why was it named Loganberry? Does any of you know?
Obviously, Mr. Stout? Because Mr. Logan did the crossing.
It was first developed on the lands of Judge Logan of Santa Cruz, California. Now, we were supposed to get 2 out of 3 on that. We got only 1 out of 3. Gentlemen, you knew only the plum cut. I'm surprised at you. Mr. Hill of San Francisco will get $10, courtesy of Canada Dry. By curious coincidence, the next question I notice comes to us from Burbank, California. And it comes from the son of the late Ring Lardner, from Ring Lardner, Jr. And there are 3 questions here about Sherlock Holmes. That's your master's voice, Mr. Stout. And let's see whether you know anything about the detective stories of Sherlock Holmes. What man did Sherlock Holmes acknowledge as his superior in observation and deduction? I think Mr. Stout had his hand up first. Mr. Hearn had his hand up.
Professor Moriarty.
I beg pardon?
Sherlock Holmes acknowledged Professor Moriarty as his superior, but subsequent to that, he acknowledged that his brother was his superior in deduction.
Which one would you like to let stand as your answer?
Well, I think Moriarty, because Moriarty is more dramatic, but when you added the words deduction, I guess that confined it to his brother. I don't know that he ever did admit that Moriarty could deduce better than he did.
Yes, I believe that it was his brother. Yeah. His name was what, Mr. Stout?
Began with M.
Yes, Mycroft. Did you know that, Mr. Kieran?
I knew it was his brother, but I would not remember his name.
No, I don't think any of us would.
You never forget a face, do you?
No.
Actually, Mr. Stout, does Mycroft Holmes ever appear in any of the stories?
Yes, in one of them.
Does he?
Sherlock goes to consult him on one of these cases.
And you actually are
at
introduced
his club.
To him.
Of course, since it's in London.
I didn't remember that. Very well. 1 right out of 3 questions about Sherlock Holmes. Now, what woman successfully outwitted Sherlock Holmes? Mr. Kieran.
A queen of a foreign country who came to him as a client and outwitted him, and all he got out of it, I believe, was her autographed photograph when the case was over.
Would that be right, Mr. Stout?
Wrong.
I'm going to ask Mr. Stout to be the umpire on this.
It was the whilom friend and to be wife of a continental king.
You wouldn't like to give me the name.
She was not, had not been, and I think never was going to be a queen.
You've got the
finest. Her name was, I think, Irene.
Irene, yes, and her last name?
Sorry.
That's all right. Irene's good enough. We always like to call them by their first names on this program. Irene Adler, and the story was what? Called what? Do you remember, Mr. Stout?
It was about the letter. Scandlin Bohemia.
A Scandlin Bohemia. Yes, that's the correct response, I think, Mr. Kieran. Now, your answer may be correct, but
it's the story, but I just thought that I'm easily impressionable, and I thought she was a queen. You know?
Well, do you have that... do you have that same experience with most of the ladies you meet around town, Mr. Kieran? Now, gentlemen, 1 more question about Sherlock Holmes, sent in by Mr. Lardner. What learned criminal in the Holmes stories wrote a treatise on the binomial theorem? I shall not ask you to explain the binomial theorem. Merely name the criminal. Merely name the criminal. Ah, I think we've even baffled the practically unbafflable Mr. Stout. The answer is one of your first responses, Mr. Stout, Professor Moriarty.
He did that too.
Yes, he did that too.
Elementary, my dear Stout.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Should have known that, I suppose. Let's see, we got 1 wrong. We're supposed to get 2 out of 3. We've just got by the skin of our teeth. Mr. Stout, speaking of the Holmes stories and the binomial theorems and such like, tell me, why is there so much scholarship in modern detective stories? I noticed that you and your colleagues have become extremely learned during the last 10 years, and unless you have a full knowledge of Egyptology and anthropology and so forth, it's practically impossible to read you, Phelps.
Well, I presume it's because No one is really competent to write a good detective story except a very erudite and able person, and naturally the things they know come into the story.
That was Mr. Stout speaking. I'm very glad to get that modest appraisal, Mr. Stout. Now, from Buffalo, New York, from Mr. Charles Hall, comes a question which tests your knowledge of classical mythology. Now, if a modern community were peopled by gods or humans from classical mythology, who would turn up in the following roles and why? The first would be an arms manufacturer, a manufacturer of weapons. Mr. Funk.
Mars, I presume.
Mars, why would you say that?
For war?
Yes, it would be a fair response, but I think more specifically, Mr. Adams?
Vulcan.
Vulcan. Why Vulcan?
Because he was a blacksmith.
He was a blacksmith. Yeah, he made weapons for the gods. That was his job. Remember, he made the famous shield of Achilles, I think. Will that be right, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, he made all the shields, including the Aegis of Minerva. And he also made the shield for Mars and his sword.
Yes, that's the last time I give any information.
Yeah.
Mr. Kieran can always cap it with two more pieces of information. Now, if a Western Union messenger... let's make that Western Union or Postal Telegraph. Turned up. They all have their hands up. Mr. Punk, what classical...
Would it be Mercury by some chance?
Yes, Mercury, unquestionably, who acted as messenger for the gods. And how did Mercury, the messenger of that period, travel? On a bicycle, Mr. Punk? How did he get around?
I thought it was on wings.
Yes, and where did he have them attached?
On his ankles.
On his ankles. We like to get you very precise on these matters, Mr. Punk, if you don't mind.
Very embarrassing.
You're coming along nicely, though. Now, suppose somebody turned up as a ferry boat captain. What character would that be? Mr. Adams.
Charon. C-H-A-R-O-N.
Yes, that's mispronounced slightly, but otherwise...
That's
very
what
good
I was
response.
Afraid of. Yeah. I think it's Charon, isn't it?
Mr. Punk?
Isn't it Charon?
Well, don't ask me. You're a lexicographer.
Well, have you a dictionary here?
Not one. No. We never have any books of reference. Charon is correct. Thank you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Funk. A ferryman at the Styx who bore the dead across the river Styx to Hades. Now, if the role were the role of a waitress, what character would that be? Mr. Kieran.
Hebe. Cupbearer to the gods.
Cupbearer to the gods. 4 out of 4. Pretty good. The next question from Mrs. W.G. Wilcox of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's a very nice one. Now, listen carefully, gentlemen. If a schoolmaster had a date with an alewife and a sailor's choice, where would they be likely to meet? I'll repeat that. If a schoolmaster had a date with an alewife, A-L-E-W-I-F-E, and a sailor's choice, where would the three of them be likely to meet? Sounds as if this particular schoolmaster could teach us a thing or two. Mr. Kieran.
I think they're all fishers.
They are all fishers, that's right. Would you like to explain what each of them is?
I don't know. An alewife is a small fish, edible fish that runs up the... New England stream.
It's just barely edible, being a herring, Mr. Kieran.
It's a small herring.
Yes. That's one of the best things about it. Alewife belongs to the herring family. Schoolmaster would be what sort of fish?
I really don't know them.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes,
it'd be a new experience for me. It's a snapper. And I believe found...
It's a young bluefish. A snapper is.
All right. I'm not going to tell you anything more, Mr. Kieran. That's the last time, absolutely. And a sailor's choice would be what sort of fish? Well, I believe it's used for various fishes, a porgy, a pigfish, a pinfish, and also a grunt, whatever a grunt is. What is a grunt, Mr. Kieran?
It's an odd-looking fish that makes a sort of squawky, grunty noise when you catch it, or lift it out of the water, I mean.
And you actually have hearing acquaintance with it, with a grunt?
Yes, I fish by ear.
Very well. We check up our disbursements, and we find that Canada Dry has paid out $10. Our highly touted experts knew most of the answers, but not quite all of them. And while they're touting themselves still higher, Mr. Milton Cross has a few words to say.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Information, please, presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Now, don't be alarmed, Mr. Fadiman. I haven't lost my place. The repetition of our opening speech was merely to emphasize that word, beverages. For in addition to ginger ale and sparkling water, Canada Dry produces a wide assortment of popular beverages. And each bottle bears the familiar Canada Dry label. Everyone seems to appreciate the exceedingly great care exercised by Canada Dry. Constant testing of all ingredients maintains our high standard of quality. All water used in Canada Dry beverages is filtered and purified many times before it is carbonated. And Canada Dry's own pinpoint carbonation, a carefully developed and scientific process, points up the delicious flavors and imparts an exhilarating sparkle. Because of all this diligence and care, the Canada Dry label has become a symbol of high standards. And that's why today more people than ever before are saying, Canada Dry, please.
Most enlightening, Mr. Cross. And as a point of information, your brief speech was timed in 64 seconds. Now shall we go on to a question that comes to us from Raleigh, North Carolina, from Miss Foy Ingram. Miss Ingram wants you, gentlemen, to give four instances in fiction or poetry in which a picture is vital to the plot. The picture plays an important part in the plot. Mr. Kieran had his hand up first.
The Merchant of Venice, the picture of Portia is on the casket Bassanio picks at last and wins through that, wins Portia as his bride.
That's quite correct. That casket was made of what metal?
Lead. Base lead.
Base lead. Ordinary lead. That's one. Now, Mr. Funk, you had your hand up.
Am I wrong in one of Robert Browning's about the Duchess?
You're quite right. It was a picture. Yes. And what is the title of the poem by Robert Browning, Mr. Funk?
It has Duchess in it.
It has,
I forget
yes.
the exact title.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, I was going to say that the opening is, that's my last Duchess painted on the wall. I
yes,
call that
right.
piece a wonder now, and so forth.
Yes,
Father
I'm sure you could go on with it. Well, the poem is simply called, Mr. Stout.
I'm sorry.
It's called simply My Last Duchess.
My Last Duchess.
That's two. Very good, Mr. Funk. Mr. Adams.
The picture that was turned toward the wall.
What is that, Mr.
That
Adams?
Is a song. A popular song.
Would you like me to allow a popular song, in as poetry this evening?
Sure.
All right.
Poetry.
I'm being bluffed into this, but I'll allow it.
There's a name that's never spoken.
Go ahead. What rhymes with spoken?
There's a mother's heart that's broken.
That's nice.
There is just another missing from the old home, that is all.
That's all I can stand, Mr. Adams. Stop. Very good. That's three. Mr. Stout.
Must it be a poem?
No, it could be a novel.
The picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes, very good. Who wrote it?
Oscar Wilde,
yes.
Or The Face on the Barroom Floor.
Yes, that would be a very good one. And if I may be permitted to name a favorite work of art of mine that's neither fiction or poetry, I think there was a moving picture some years ago that the Marx Brothers starred in called Animal Crackers. And wasn't there a picture, Mrs. Rittenhouse's picture, which was stolen? And one of the Marx Brothers had to find the picture. I remember that the picture was very vital to the plot. Although the plot wasn't very vital to that particular picture.
There's another Mr. song called Adams? A Picture No Artist Can Paint.
Who wrote the song?
I don't know.
All right, that's good enough. We have six pictures at least. Done yourself proud, gentlemen, on that question. The next one from D. Miller of Chicago is a question testing your knowledge of the meanings of words. I want you to give the original meanings of the following words by tracing them back to their sources in any language that's handy to you. The first word is a very simple one that we use very constantly. Melancholy. Melancholy. What's the original meaning of it, melancholy? Mr. Kieran?
It comes from the Greek, melon, that means black.
Yep.
And the collie part of it, I think, goes back to thoughts or disposition of some kind.
You're on the right track, but I think that cole means the secretion of the bile.
Right. That's right.
A black secretion. It was thought that people who had a... go ahead with it, Mr. Kieran. You want to explain that to us?
That they turned black, rather with a depressing look on them, and that they had depressing thoughts and were depressed from something that made them, in this state, melancholy.
That's right. Those who had an excess of black bile were thought to be of that nature, melancholy or sad nature. That's quite correct. Now, a word that's even simpler, the word silly, which we use constantly. The word silly means what, originally? Silly.
I'm having a busman's holiday.
Mr. Funk, go ahead.
No.
Enjoy yourself. That's in your dictionary, I know, Mr. Funk. The word silly goes back to the Anglo-Saxon zelig, S-O-E-L-I-G, which is, of course, related to the German selig, S-E-L-I-G, means what?
Happy.
Yes, Mr. Kieran, happy or prosperous or good or blessed. How a word originally meaning good or blessed now becomes silly, I don't know. Mr. Funk, how do words change that way?
The silly are the only ones who are good, aren't they, Mr. Funk?
It's a moral remark, which
well,
I should
take to
heart.
Well, they change by common usage. People do distort them and change them.
Yes, they do. And
you
funny
have to
thing
accept
is,
the common usage.
It's a funny thing, Mr. Funk, isn't it, that words tend to degrade themselves in meaning. And as a word which once had a rather nice meaning, tends after a while to have a, what you fellows call a pejorative meaning, or a bad meaning.
Well, you've topped me on that word, but sometimes...
Yeah,
why
you look that up?
Sometimes they come from the gas house district and cross the tracks and come up also to Park Avenue from the slums.
Thank you for tracing that career for us.
My theory, Mr. Fadlin, is not entirely facetious. A good poet said, be good, dear child, and let who will be clever.
Yes, think there's anything in it?
It means that the good child was a silly one, I suppose.
Yes, yes, but I think she only made out well in that poem. We have melancholy and silly traced for us. Now, the last word, we haven't melancholy and silly traced for us, rather. I've traced silly for you. The last word is pecuniary. Pecuniary. Mr. Adams? Pecuniary? It means what, Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran.
From the herd.
Pecuniary is...
Mr. Kieran can help us out a little.
Pecuniary was the Latin word for money.
Yes, but what's the original meaning? What's the original meaning of the word?
Well, the original meaning traces back to the fact that in the old days, I believe that money, wealth was in cattle and other such forms.
Well, what's the word cattle got to do with it, with the word pecuniary?
Well, I think that it means beef or something on the hoof, pecus.
The herd.
Yes, pecus means a herd, as Mr. Adams says, or cattle. That's quite right. We got... two out of three on that one. We were supposed to get three out of three to satisfy Mr. Miller, so we'll send $10, courtesy of Canada Dry, to him. Let's see, will we have time for another question? I'm afraid not. A final checkup reveals that Canada Dry has lost a total of $20. Now, Mr. Milton Cross wants a brief word, and then I'll be back with news of next week's guests.
That famous British custom, time out in the afternoon for refreshments, is almost as old as the Empire. For centuries, it has been regarded as merely social. But now we know, by scientific experiments on people doing all sorts of work and play, that mid-afternoon refreshments relax tired minds and bodies, furnish new energy with which to carry on. It has occurred to me that it's a custom we could well profit by. So why not take time out on these afternoons? Relax for a while with a cool, sparkling glass of Canada Dry Ginger Ale. For ginger ale is always refreshing, always thirst-quenching, a quick energy builder, ideal for such occasions. And Canada Dry is the world's finest, the champagne of ginger ales. Now here's a special tip to mothers. You can make a delicious ginger ale ice cream soda by simply putting a generous scoop of vanilla ice cream in a glass and adding Canada Dry. Your children will love it.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. And Mr. Wilfred Funk and Mr. Rex Stout, won't you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for joining the fun this evening, and may I add, doing so well. Now, next week, our invaluable trio will be on hand, Mr. Oscar Levant, Mr. John Kieran, and Mr. Franklin P. Adams. And our guest of honor will be that noted news commentator, journalist, and author, Mr. Raymond Graham Swing. To our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. Make them as hard as you wish. And if you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, we'll be most glad to have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these summer favorites. Canada Dry Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky, both made with a genuine fruit base and the finest ingredients. No preservatives or artificial flavoring. So for cooling, tall drinks with a lemon flavor, order Canada Dry's Tom Collins Mixer. For a lime flavor, insist on Canada Dry Lime Ricky. The family size is economical, costing only 15 cents. This is Milton Cross saying good night, all.
And now Groucho Marx from Command Performance with a parody on game shows.
So in accordance with our policy of keeping you abreast of the times, we bring you all the quiz programs rolled into one. We've named this impending catastrophe, Dr. People Are Double and Take It, Truth or Ignorance, It Pays to Be Information, or Leave It and Let the Quiz Kids Take the Consequences. And now we bring you that genial, jovial, affable, laughable custodian of the questions, that ever-cheerful dispenser of brand-new silver dollars, Dr. Groucho Marx.
Thank you, thank you. I'm happy to be here again this week as your quizmaster. I say I'm happy to be here. I'd much rather be home in my backyard with a tall, cool beer and a short, warm housemaid. I wrote that myself. Now let's get on with the show. Better yet, let's get on with the housemaid. And remember, this program... Boys, boys. And remember, this program is presented by the makers of Sludge, the breakfast food that makes you wish it was lunchtime. Unlike other breakfast foods, Sludge doesn't crackle, snap, crunch, or pop. It tinkles. No other cereal can make this statement. Personally, I'm just as happy. Who wants a cereal that makes statements? How'd you like to sit down for a quiet breakfast in the morning and have a plate of oatmeal say, "Hello, Harry, how'd you sleep last night? When are you going to pay the rent?" I like an oatmeal that keeps his lump shut. If he wants to talk, let her talk to other oatmeal. I like an oatmeal that's kind, not one that gruels. Well, let's get on with our program. I turn you over to my associate quizmaster, Professor Frank Morris. Well, what have you got, Professor?
I have a lady in the balcony, Doctor.
That's great. See, she's got a friend.
Now, dear, what's your name?
Is that really important, Professor?
Oh, no. I mean, what's your number? How can I get... where do we go?
Oh, come now, Professor. Let's get to the question. Aren't you going to ask me one?
Well, not right now, my dear. But later on, I'm going to ask you a pep. I like to know your name. I don't particularly care where I have my fun, but I like to know who I have my fun with.
All right, my name is Georgia Gibbs.
Oh, Georgia Gibbs! Well, speaking of Georgia, I used to know a girl down there. She was a peach picker. Many a happy afternoon I've spent chasing her up and down a ladder. But if you're Georgia Gibbs, you should be singing.
Say, that gives me an idea.
Oh, I hope it's not the same as...
Go right ahead, my dear.
Loving that man of mine. Tell me he's lazy. Tell me he's slow. Tell me I'm crazy. Maybe I know. I can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's a rainy day. And when he comes back, that day is
Thank you, Georgia Gibbs. Professor Morgan, give that lady 12 silver dollars and help yourself to 15.
Well, that was recorded in the war years, and following the war, Groucho was persuaded to do his own real quiz program called You Bet Your Life, and we're going to listen to an episode of it right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is floor, F-L-O-O-R.
Really?
You bet your life! More than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, a comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho! Let's not go overboard. It's only me. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples tonight. Mr. Fenneman, who's first to try for the $1,000?
We invited some wives of college professors to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Mrs. Dorothy Robbins. Her partner is a memory expert, Mr. David Roth. And here they are. Folks, come in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks. Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. Say the secret word and divide $100. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mrs. Robbins, you're the college professor's wife, eh?
Yes, I am.
Where are you from?
I was born in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I admire this audience. That's the first time anybody's mentioned Brooklyn without the whole audience going into hysterics.
I'm surprised, too.
I'm surprised and gratified, too. This must be a very high-class audience. You're from Brooklyn, huh? I'll call you Dorothy, huh?
Fine.
And you can call me Dorothy, too. How long have you been married, Mrs. Robbins?
17 years.
Has it been happy all along?
Oh, yes.
And what college is your husband a professor?
At UCLA.
What subject does your husband teach?
Business administration.
I see. And is he good at it?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Does he ever advise you about your checkbook at the end of the month?
Well, he tries to organize me.
And has he been very successful?
Well, when I'm organized, I can't find things.
Well, that must make it very pleasant around the house, huh? And Mr. David Roth, I'll just call you Dave, huh?
Correct.
You can call me Dorothy. Now, let's see. What is it you do, Mr. Roth?
Why, I'm a memory expert.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Where are you from, Mr. Roth?
Well, I was born in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh. Well, no wonder you're a memory expert. Anything from Milwaukee is bound to have a head on it. Are you married?
Oh, yes.
Any children?
One.
Well, you are a memory expert, all right. You remember everything, don't you?
How old are you, Mr. Ross?
Oh, I'm past 50.
Well, when did you pass it, Mr. Ross? And how fast were you going?
Pretty fast.
How much past 50?
Well, quite a bit. My wife, rather, I wouldn't tell my age.
Would you tell your wife's age?
No, I wouldn't dare to do that.
And you're the professor's wife,
that's
aren't
right,
you,
yes.
Dorothy?
Mm-hmm.
My memory is improving already, mm-hmm. isn't it? And all it took was a short conversation with Mr. What did you say your name was? What did you say your name was?
Oh, Ross.
Ross. My eyes are not what they used to be. I don't remember anything very well. I thought I reckoned you were the fellow who was here a minute ago, weren't you, Mr. Ross? Now, tell me, Mr. Oglethorpe, how did you happen to become a memory expert when you were a little boy? Was it your ambition to become an elephant?
No, I'll tell you. I was a boy in high school in Cincinnati.
And you were a boy in high school?
A boy in high school.
Well, that I'm sure of, huh?
And I was about 15 years...
Were you ever a girl in high school, Mr.
And I was about 15 years of age, and I found that my memory wasn't any good. So I tried to devise a method so I could at least pass my examination. And that's how I got to be a memory expert.
I see. You know, I devised a method to help pass examinations, too. But, they threw me out of school for it. I was the West Point of my time. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play You Bet Your Life for a chance at the $1,000 question. But right now, I want you to pay attention to something real important.
In one amazing test after another, DeSoto's superior performance has been proved again and again. In the famous waterproof ignition test, a new DeSoto is driven at higher than usual speed through a water-flooded street. Water is allowed to splash right up over the engine, reaching almost every part of the ignition system. Yet the new DeSoto keeps right on running without missing a beat. To you, waterproof ignition means your new DeSoto will start in even the wettest weather. And what a ride DeSoto gives you! The famous DeSoto road tests have proved that DeSoto's Auraflow shock absorbers give the smoothest ride ever known. Why, the bumps just melt right out from under you. And DeSoto's sensational blowout tests have proved the value of safety rim wheels. With an ordinary car, a blowout may cause the tire to leave the rim and may throw the car out of control. But with DeSoto's amazing safety rim wheel, special protective ridges hold the tire securely on the rim and allow the driver to bring the new DeSoto to a sure, safe stop. Yes, friends, in one amazing test after another, DeSoto's superior performance has been proved again and again with waterproof ignition, Auraflow shock absorbers, safety rim wheels, and a host of other exciting features. See it now at your DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
All right, now let's see how well you work together as a team. George, would you mind explaining the rules?
Here are the rules. You bet as much of your $20 as you want on each of four questions, and the couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 question later in the show.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected capital cities of the world. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 are you going to bet?
To 15.
15. What is the capital city of Denmark?
Copenhagen.
Copenhagen is right.
Well, you're on your way. You have $35.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of the 35 are you going to bet on your second question?
30.
30? What is the capital city of Bolivia?
No, that one.
We're stuck.
Uh-huh. Well, it's La Paz, or La Paz, L-A, capital P-A-Z. That's a tough one. That's too bad. How much have they got now?
You dropped down to $5.
Oh, well, that's a shame. Here's your third question. How much of the $5 are you going to risk now?
We bet four.
Four.
$4. All right. What is the capital city of Poland?
Warsaw.
Warsaw is right. Please.
Well, you're on your way again. You have $9.
Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the $9 are you going to risk?
Well, all of it.
All of it. All right. All
shoot the works. What is the capital city of Argentina?
Buenos Aires.
Buenos Aires is right.
And you lined up with a grand total of $18.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected some new parents to be on the show tonight, Groucho. And here they are, Alexander Podgorny of the United States Navy and Mrs. Podgorny. Come in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. Say the secret word and win $100. It's a common word, something you find around the house. Barbara and Alexander Podgorny. Huh?
Yes, that's right.
That's a kind of a curious name. What kind of a name is that, Alex?
It's a Polish name, sir.
Polish?
Yes, sir.
Oh, are you in the Polish Navy?
Afraid I'm not, sir.
No. Well, don't be afraid. You ought to be very happy that you're not. What is your first name, Mrs. Podgorny?
Barbara.
Barbara?
Yeah.
Well, that's a lovely name, and you're a very attractive girl. And you're a very lucky Pole.
Thank you.
How old are you, Alex?
I'm 28, sir.
28. And how old is your baby?
He's 4 months today.
Alex is 4 months?
No, our baby is.
Oh, well, where are you from, Barbara?
I'm from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Where?
Corpus Christi, Texas.
Texas, huh? Oh. There they are, the people from Brooklyn again. How old are you, Alex?
I'm 28, sir.
28, huh? And your name Mr. Roth, did you say?
No, it
isn't. What did you say your name was?
I'm Barbara Podgorny.
Oh, Barbara Podgorny. You're Mr. Roth, huh? How do you like being married to a sailor, Barbara? Is he gobs of fun?
Yes, he is. He really is.
Is he? Does he have a girl in every port?
No, he doesn't.
How do you know he hasn't got any other girls?
Well, he's land-based.
Oh, he's land-based?
Yes, he is. He doesn't go to sea.
He doesn't go to sea who? That's a kind of an incomplete statement, isn't it?
No, what I mean is he's stationed up at Point Magoo.
Well, where is Point where?
Point Magoo.
Point Magoo?
Yes.
Is that anything like Fibber Magoo and Molly?
No,
what is a Point Magoo? I don't understand this, huh?
Point Magoo is the Naval Air Missile Test Center.
Well, where is Point Magoo?
It's about 60 miles up the coast, I believe.
Your husband is at Point Magoo, 60 miles up the coast?
Yes, he is.
Well, who is this imposter?
That's my husband.
Why are you stationed at Point Magoo? What is that?
Point Magoo is a Naval Air Missile Test Center.
What do you mean, a missile? Is that anything like mistletoe?
Mistletoe, sir, is something you kiss a girl under.
Not me. I kiss a girl under her nose. Some of those noses look like Point Magoo, too. Tell me something about these guided missiles, will you? How do they work? Alex?
Well, it's an experimental experimental and testing of guided missiles is what it is, sir. And outside of that, it's restricted. There's nothing more, much more I can tell you.
This is top secret stuff?
Yes, yes it is.
You're not allowed to disclose anything?
Nothing at all, sir.
In other words, it's none of my business. Is that right?
That's right, absolutely.
You'll thank me to keep my nose out of it. Well, it may interest you to know that I can tell you plenty about guided missiles. I used to be one.
You used to be one.
I was the first man ever shot out of a cannon. I was doing fine, too, until I got a swell head. Where were we? Oh, yes. Tell me, Mr. Roth. Mr. Podgorny, we were talking about your new baby. It happens we weren't, but it's time we did, don't you think?
Yes.
What is this little youngster's name?
His name is Russell Anthony Podgorny.
Well, that's a fine name. There's a lot of eloquence to it, huh? Well, it's a wonderful thing having a new baby. Right now, I'd give anything to be in your shoes. You know why?
No, I don't.
I've got a nail in mine. Well, now that you have a baby, do you get more money from the Navy, Alex?
No, I don't, sir. You have to have two or more children before you get any additional allowances.
Is that so? You mean the Navy doesn't give a toot for one baby, eh? That doesn't seem fair. Isn't there anything you can do about it?
No, sir.
Well, Well, you could file a complaint with the Secretary of the Navy, couldn't you?
I'm afraid he wouldn't get it.
Does Alex ever bother to amuse the baby?
Oh, yes, he does quite a lot.
Could you show us how he amuses the baby?
Well, he'll go, boodly, 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 or... Look here now.
I guess it's just as well if you don't have another kid.
Huh?
But seriously, Barbara, as the MC say, does this really amuse the baby? Boodly, 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 boodly.
Oh, yes, he just coos and laughs.
And this is what he does?
Yes,
could
he
you
does.
Show us how you do it, Alex?
I really know.
But you do it to the baby, huh?
Yes, I do.
Well, Alex, it may amuse the baby now, but in 10 years, that boy's going to be worried about his own man. Well, you're a wonderful representative young American couple, and I think the United States Navy and America can be proud of kids like you, too.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you'll go far.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure you'll go even further than Point Magoo, you two.
We hope to.
You may even have to go to your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
No.
And you won't make any mistake if you go there. Do I sound like Godfrey? I have some tea here that I would like to dip in. Now you're going to play. They eat and drink on that show. I get nothing. Did you ever try to eat a DeSoto or a Plymouth? They're wonderful writing qualities, but you cannot eat anything on it except an occasional inner tube. All right, now you're going to play You Bet Your Life for a chance at the $1,000 question. You run your $20 into more than their other couples. I can't tell you how much you have to win, but Mr. Fenneman is going to remind our listeners.
The professor's wife and the memory expert won $18.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected instruments played by orchestra leaders. Here's your first question. How much would you bet?
What do you think?
How much are you going to bet?
$13
on a dead man's chest, huh? All right. What instrument does Carmen Caballero play?
Piano, sir.
The piano is correct.
Well, you're off to a good start. You have $33.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 33 are you going to bet this time?
30.
What instrument does Xavier Cugat play?
Violin, sir.
Violin is right.
You now have $63.
And here's your third question. How much are you going to bet this time?
Okay.
62, sir.
62. Yeah. 62. What instrument does Freddie Martin play? Talk it over.
I don't know.
Take a guess if you don't know.
I believe it's a piano, sir.
No, I'm sorry. It's a saxophone. You should
I
have known
it was
that.
Some kind of a horn, but I didn't know
don't
what
you
kind
kids
it
go,
was.
I'm sure you've gone to dance halls and stuff.
We've danced for Freddie Martin.
We sure have.
It's a shame you don't have one.
You know what was the... You know it was the trouble, don't you? You two were watching each other instead of the orchestra leader.
Oh.
Now you're down to a dollar.
Yes.
It's a good thing you haven't got that second kid. But the Navy is still pretty steady pay, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right. Now, how much are you going to bet?
We'll bet the dollar.
You're going to bet the whole dollar?
Right.
I'm going to bet a dollar.
If you lose this, you can dive through a porthole. Huh? All right. What instrument does Woody Herman play?
Clarinet.
Clarinet is right.
Oh, honey.
We got you only one. $2.
I'll give you one question, Arne. If you get it right, you win $10. Think hard now. No help from the audience. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Who was buried in Grant's tomb?
Couldn't be Grant.
General Grant is right. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a wrestling referee and a woman who works in a candy factory. And here they come, Mrs. Betty Whitener and Mr. Mike Ruby. Folks, come in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word and you'll divide $100. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Betty Whitener?
Whitener.
Whitener, huh? And Mike Ruby, huh? Where are you from, Mrs. Whitener?
I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee, just below Lookout Mountain.
There's those people from Brooklyn again. You're from Lookout Mountain, eh? And what do you look out for while you're up there, Betty?
Well, on a clear day, you can look out over the mountain, see seven states. Mm-hmm. And it's a very famous place.
You know what
place.
Seven states you can see? Yeah.
Well, Georgia and Alabama and Kentucky and I can't think of the rest of them right now.
Well, you're probably only one halfway up, huh? What do you do, Mrs. Whitener, besides spying on seven states?
I work for Alpha Fresh McFarlane.
Well, have you complained to your husband? What do you mean, awful fresh? What's the matter with him?
Well, he's not fresh, but his candy is.
Oh, I see. That's the name of the candy. Awful that's fresh candy. Right. I see. That's rather clever, isn't it, huh? Are you there? Well, just how fresh is it? About if I bit into a maraschino cherry, would it squirt me in the eye or something?
Well, it's liable to, because they break down after a certain length of time, and it's liable to.
Yeah, well,
to.
Who doesn't, huh? That's the history of my life, Mrs. Whitener. Let's not become nostalgic here, huh? What is your job at this fudge foundry?
I'm a dipper.
What do you mean you're a dipper?
I dip in chocolate.
You must be an awful mess when you get home at night. Well, how did they get the nuts in the peanut brittle? That's always puzzled me.
Well, the candy maker that makes the peanut brittle, he goes out to the nut house and he gets the nuts and he brings it back in and they have to weigh all their ingredients. Then he takes the syrup and the glucose and the sugar and all the ingredients that he puts into it.
Well, is it easy to get somebody out of the nut house? You're Mike Ruby, you're a wrestling referee.
That's right.
What's necessary to be a referee, a wrestling referee? I've been watching it on television.
Well, first you have to go down to the State Athletic Commission and get
Wait just a moment. You're not going to stand there and tell me that wrestling is considered an athletic event.
Well, yes, it is. It's supervised by the... Well, I guess ever since they've had an athletic commission in the state of California,
is
anyhow.
That so? I would think the Screen Actors Guild had more to do with that. Don't take a slug at me. I may come back with some peanut butter. How do you get a license? Is your name Mr. Roth?
Mike Ruby.
Oh, Mike Ruby. Do you have to get a license? Do you have to prove that you can't see 2 feet without your glasses?
No, you have to take a very rigid physical and written examination to get a license.
I've seen a lot of wrestling on television, and I have a question. How is it all I ever see is the referee bending over when I watch a wrestling match? Well, you know, you fellas could make a fortune selling advertising. There's one thing I've been avoiding, and I wish you'd give me a frank answer. Is wrestling really honest?
Sure.
Look, I'm not a 6-year-old child, you know. What makes you think it's honest?
Well, I'm a former wrestler myself.
And you regard that as evidence? I better be careful. You throw a hammerlock on me. If you'd care to make a statement about wrestling, you can go right ahead, and I'll be quiet. I promise.
Well, I'll admit there are some crooked athletes in the wrestling game, but I don't think there's any more crooked men engaged in the wrestling game than in any other sport or occupation. Or
in other words, what goes on in your wrestling? In other words, what goes on in your wrestling arena is honest, fair, and above reproach. Is that it?
Sure.
That's well, in that case, I own the crookedest television set in this town. Well, it's been most enlightening talking to you two, and next time I bite into a chocolate cream, I won't be surprised if I find Gorgeous George in there. Now you're going to play your bet your life. You beat our other couples, and you'll get a chance at the $1,000 question. Can't tell you how much you have to win, but Gorgeous George is going to remind our listeners. That's Mr. Fenneman I'm referring to.
The professor's wife and the memory expert lead with $18.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected nicknames of sports immortals. Is that right?
That's right.
Or immortal sports. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
15.
Who was known as the Sultan of Swat?
Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth is right.
You have $35.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of the 35 are you going to bet on your second?
32 and a half.
What tennis player was known as Little Miss Pokerface? Take a guess if you don't know.
Helen Wills.
Helen Wills Moody is right.
You now have $67.50.
And here's your third question. How much of the $67.55 are you going to bet?
50.
$65. $65.
With you?
Yes.
All right. What French boxer was known as the Orchid Man?
Gorgeous Georges Carpentier.
Carpentier is right. I just wanted you to know that I knew the incorrect pronunciation, huh? And here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much have they got?
I think they have $132.50.
How much are you going to go for?
Shoot it?
Huh?
Yes.
Okay. This is the last question?
This is the coup de grace. What am I saying? Who was known as the Galloping Ghost?
Redgrange.
Redgrange is right. I give him a big kiss. He answered all those questions.
You now have a grand total of $265, and that means that the referee and the chocolate dipper with $265 in just 1 minute get a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. Folks, one thing you can always count on is expert attention for your car when you take it to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. No matter what service your car may need, whether it's an engine tune-up, a winter checkup, or just a simple lubrication job, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer has the equipment to do it right. And he has the master technicians who know how to use that equipment, too. Yes, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer is the man to see when your car needs service of any kind. And he has complete paint facilities, too, to give you a top job, whether your car needs an overall paint job or a touch-up to prevent rust and corrosion in the bad weather driving ahead. So, if you want to put your car in top running condition at a price that's fair, take it where you see the famous sign of better service, the friendly sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here comes the chocolate dipper and the referee, all set for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question.
Now, Betty and Mike, here's a chance to really wiggle yourself into some real big money now. Here we go for $1,000. I give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you. Think carefully and please no help from the audience. Here it is. It's a tough one. In 1947, the ECA, or Marshall Plan, came into being to help the peoples of Europe. For $1,000, tell me, what do the letters ECA stand for? And I want you to tell me exactly. Now think it over. You have 15 seconds.
Was it? I don't know. Go ahead, try.
All right, kids, take a stab. What do you say? It's got to be precise now.
European... Cooperative Association, but that's not it.
Well, you were flirting with it. It's a tough question. I didn't know it either. It's Economic Cooperation Administration.
Gee, it's close.
I'm sorry. And our source is the Encyclopedia Americana. That's the correct answer. Anyhow, they won how much?
$265 in the quiz.
Well, that's not too bad. That means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Congratulations and thanks to both of you and to all of our contestants on the show tonight.
Thank you. Good night, buddy.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at the same time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,500. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to visit your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a reminder that when you contribute to the United Red Feather campaign this month, you contribute to many campaigns in one. Yes, to the community health and welfare services of most cities have been added the national services of the United Defense Fund. So remember, give the United Red Feather way. You Bet Your Life, transcribed from Hollywood, is produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.